Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome into this week's edition of This Week in UNC Baseball with head coach Scott Forbes. I'm Tommy Ashley. That's Matt Clements. We're sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt and Congruity. Coach Forbes, if it could have been more perfect in Chapel Hill this weekend between the weather and the sweep of Notre Dame, I mean, how could you ask for more from out of your team from what you saw Friday, Saturday, and Sunday?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think we played well, and that's what you're, this time of year, you want to keep getting better and try to be good in all aspects of the game. And I felt like our guys, pitched it well. We picked it up well, defended well, made good base running decisions, had quality at bats, and just a beautiful weekend too. We've launched our dugout club. A lot of those members were here on Saturday night, which was awesome. We honored first responders, which was awesome. And then it warmed up finally. So for me, it couldn't have been a better weekend here in Chapel Hill, unless maybe we got three shutouts, because that's the old pitching coach in me. and obviously, if we'd have won that game in the middle of the week, that'd have been a better weekend, in my opinion. But we'll take it and move on and get ready for another tough week.
Yeah, I'm gonna sort of go back to front a little bit, because I think DeCaro shows his chops and he's been fantastic. Sprague once again, but I want to start with Aiden and him getting thrown in there. And I asked him post game, how big was that South Carolina game for you mentally to do that on that stage against South Carolina in high leverage situations and to be able to sort of double down on it and do it against Notre Dame? And yeah, he absolutely said that was huge for him personally.
Yeah, I mean, confidence is confidence, and this is his first year pitching at this level, transferring in here from Fayetteville Tech. Obviously, he's an in-state kid. But he's looked good for us for the most part all year, and the stuff has been good all year. I'm talking like top three round stuff based on what my eyes have seen. The ability to strike you out as well, and the fastball velocity continuing to climb. But with confidence, your command's going to get better. Every now and then he would walk too many guys, but you can tell he's more confident in himself and executing his pitches in any count. And then, Coach Gaines has worked really hard with him on his changeup, and that pitch has been a weapon. And then he doesn't necessarily have to always throw the breaking ball for a strike. But a phenomenal kid, golly, we're lucky to have him here. And he, he's a big kid too. I'm sure you guys noticed how big and physical he is in the weight room. Coach Gatz and our strength and conditioning program, our trainers, they've done a good job with him because he hadn't done all this stuff. He had to learn, what is it going to take for me to take another step? And a credit to Aiden, because he's put in all the work and he's been ready and he's very competitive.
Coach Forbes, Diamond Heels fans are obviously blowing everybody up, trying to figure out, you know, this Boaz's status. Can you talk about how it goes through and the, you know, the decision-making process and how the medical process works for the determining, you know, a course of action?
Yeah. You know, the first thing is the individual comes first, his health, his career. That's part of coaching and that should never change. You know, whatever's best for Folger is what we're looking at, number one. And then obviously we're so fortunate here. We have great doctors, great medical staff, Dr. Sioka, Dr. Creighton, many, many others, Dr. Burkhoff, Terry Joe, our trainer. You know, they're evaluating them. We're sending it off, you know, to get second opinions. So they'll all get together, all these brilliant, smart people, and they'll give us what they think is best for Folger. And then I'll sit down with Folger and his family and, you know, we'll figure out what is best, because we don't know exactly. It hasn't been completely diagnosed yet. Until it's diagnosed, you know, you don't take the next step, and you always hold out that hope that, okay, you know, he'll be back for us this year. But you're also realistic from the standpoint, if that is the case, you're going to make sure you give him all the time he needs, where it is 100% healed, whatever it is, not 95% healed. Because when you're dealing with an arm issue, and that's a pitcher, it's not like it's a hamstring, you know, with a position player where you might could play at 90%. And even then, you're listening to your doctors and you're trusting them. That's what they get. You know, Dr. Sioka, Dr. Creighton, Dr. Meister, you know, they don't tell me when I should sack bunt, and I'm not going to tell them what they should do medically.
You know, certainly when we talk about the Tuesday game, how special are all these neutral site games for, you know, increasing not just the popularity of the Diamond Heels, but college baseball regionally for the fans and recruits, and not just that, but just bragging rights?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, you want to play these neutral games. And for me, too, you want to get your team out of its comfort factor as much as you can, because you're going to have to win some games on the road in the ACC, and it's harder. I mean, period, playing on the road, no matter where you are. And we've held our head above water. I feel like we should have won a couple more. But to play a team like South Carolina in a neutral spot, it's also awesome for both teams' players and the fans. And that's important to us here, that our guys get that great experience. And we tell them, we're recruiting them, hey, we're going to play East Carolina. We're going to play, you know, South Carolina in a neutral spot. We'll play somebody else. You know, if we don't play NC State because of the new rotation, we're going to try to play NC State still. We're going to play Texas Tech at home to open up next year. So the bigger opponents, the better for our fans, for sure, and for our players, because, you know, you find out, hey, here's where we are and here's where we need to get.
Wanted to ask you, sort of, if, and it, and I don't say it as a weak link or anything like that, but sort of trying to figure out third base has been a thing for you this year, and you've played several guys there. But Johnny Castagnazzi, I thought, did some good things and was pretty good at the plate. And we've talked on this show and around the water cooler about being a guy that played 100-plus games in his career, and then this year he hadn't played as much. Speak to what he provides that maybe some of the other guys don't on the field, but also his mental side to be able to stay involved, stay in it, and then when he gets the opportunity to do something with it.
Yeah, big-time sign of maturity, number one, from Johnny. You know, understanding what our program's about. He's been in it. He knows it's a team first, so there's no negotiation there. So if that's not how you are, you better figure it out quick or you'll be out the door. But Johnny's a phenomenal teammate. He's been working his tail off. He had some adversity last year with his blood clot. Couldn't start the season even playing for us. He's worked extremely hard, and he's continued to work hard defending at third, his BP, everything, every aspect. Not being concerned about the fact that he's not playing, just being ready when his name's called. And because of that, he had success. But obviously it's comforting knowing that you've got a guy like Johnny that, hey, he's been there, he's done it, he's not going to be phased, he's going to be ready, And you saw that this weekend. And I look at it as a strength. You know, it's everybody knows that, hey, there's a guy, Vanderbreak has struggled this year, but he's been doing the same thing. He's ready. Gavin's one of our better players. He's going to be back in there. It could be at third. It could be at second. You can move AMAD. You can move guys all over. So it's a good thing to have that depth. And, you know, we're lucky that that depth is high character depth as well.
Yeah, definitely. We talk about chemistry in every other sport, and I think in baseball is huge as well. Let me ask you a couple. We started to talk about it in the post game, and there have been a couple. We're not going to argue balls and strikes here, but we are going to talk blocking the plate and the Luke Stevenson call there.
What's wrong with arguing balls and strikes?
I mean, we can argue them here all day. I mean, I'll be the first person to get kicked out of the press box yelling at an umpire if you allow me to do that. What the call with Luke block? I felt like he had his foot at least covering up part of the plate.
Yeah,
what did they tell you there?
The judgment call. You know, we teach our catchers where to set up. Maybe Luke set up a little bit too far in front before the ball was coming. I honestly felt his setup was pretty good, and I thought the ball took him in. So I thought it could have went either way. You have to give them a lane, and I still felt like he had a lane because the guy still got to the plate with his hand. Luke just went and tagged him. But we're going to work on that. I'm going to show Luke the video. I'm going to say, okay, instead of setting up here, let's set up a little more here, because the umpires told me it was where he was set up. That's why they called the catcher's interference. So I don't want that to happen again. So we'll make sure we're set up at the right spot, because the ball takes you into the baseline. It's totally judgmental call from the umpire. So we'll take a look at that. And Coach Weirs works really hard with our catchers, and he'll go over that specifically today. Like, hey, man, when that play's happening, because we teach our catchers to deke the base runner, just kind of standing there like the ball's not coming. And Luke did a good job of that, but he might have been set up a little bit too far in.
Yeah, so the rule in college baseball is you can't block it before you have the ball. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and if the ball takes you into the blocking area, then that's a judgmental call.
Right.
You can't, like, drop your leg before. It has to be as you're catching the ball. But before, you cannot. There has to be a lane. So you have to be standing on the plate where there's a lane for the base runner to get.
Got it. And then another one.
I think it's a stupid rule personally, but it's a rule. I can think it's stupid all I want, because my philosophy was, if you come in there, I was going to hammer you, and your philosophy as a base runner was I'm going to hammer you. And they took that out to protect the catcher more. So it's really a protection thing for the catcher.
Right. And another one that we sort of talked about earlier in the year, and I forgot to ask you, but I was curious. You had, I forget who it was, earlier in the year, pitcher fell down. The ball didn't even get out of the grass. They called a balk. And we discussed that. Well, it happened later in the year, a couple weeks ago, and they just called it a ball. Did you ever get a clarification?
Because the ball did travel far enough.
The initial call was bad. The balk call.
They missed that call. And the umpire that made that call was man enough to call me and say, hey, I missed that call. And I said, okay, I thought the same thing, but now I know, because I just wanted to clarify the rule. Because like you said, those things happen again for sure.
Yeah, that's the inside baseball part of it for me. If folks are watching and like, what are we talking about? Well, it's cool stuff. But anyway, let's talk about the game. You got Coastal coming in on Tuesday. You talked about Coach Gilmore in the post game, but then you also flip and play NC State Thursday. So you've squeezed that midweekend this time where you didn't do it ahead of Virginia, I think it was. What's the mindset there? Is it to get guys more work, or you just got to get games in?
I mean, we're still only at 54 games scheduled. I like to play 56, but, you know, they don't let us play here during exams. We have an exam Friday. We don't have an exam Saturday. We don't have them Sunday. So, you know, in my mind, we should be playing Saturday and Sunday at least. Really, we should be playing Friday night. I don't make that decision. So we need to play, and these guys deserve to play. We didn't know we were going to get that state game moved up until later. You know, the TV, you know, obviously money make a difference. But I think it's great to play on TV. So I'm not going to get upset about that. We'll move that Thursday, Friday, Saturday. State's doing the same thing. Different people have different philosophies, I guess, but I'm glad we're playing a great team like Coastal this time of year. It'd be good for our players. We got to have some guys step up on the mound, and they're going to be given that opportunity. So, you know, it's supposed to be a beautiful, hot, warm day, and we'll focus on Coastal, and, you know, we'll focus on State after that game.
Yeah. When you talk about, you know, having that many pitching opportunities, you know, seeing what what Aiden was able to do and what Olin's done. Can you talk about the state of starting pitching? Like, who all would you be comfortable with, like, coming out of a loser's bracket in a regional? Who are the other pitchers that you think that you'd be able to stretch out for those important roles down the line?
Yeah, I think we've got multiple. We prefer not to be in a loser's bracket in a regional, but we have been in it. You know, I've watched two of them from, an undisclosed place 2 years ago. Olin's going to start tomorrow against Coastal, so we'll continue to try to stretch him out. He's definitely a starter for us. Now we're settling in on these three starters, DeCaro, Sprague, and Houck. But other guys, Cam Padgett has started many times in his career. Kyle Percival was a left-hander with multiple pitches that could start for us. Those two kind of stick out the most. Obviously, Petey's had some starting experience as well. Even a guy like Flannery hadn't pitched in a while, he could start. So I feel like all these guys could potentially start for us. But we'll zero in. You know, I would say probably if it was like a spot start and we had to have that fifth starter, most likely right now it would be Cam Padgett.
Coach Forbes, can you talk about how Vance Honeycutt has dealt with sky-high expectations? Obviously, everybody knows that he's a first-round draft talent. You know, he's excelled defensively this season. He's been unbelievable on the base paths. He's shown great power, but it doesn't seem like he's quite comfortable at the plate yet. But can you talk about how he just does whatever it takes to make the team successful and not really worry about his own individual,
Yeah, he's just a stud in every aspect. Character, work ethic, leadership, how he plays the game. I think he's the most dynamic player this school's ever had. That doesn't mean he's going to be a 20-year major leaguer, but we've never had somebody with that much power, speed, ability to change the game. I don't know of another player here defensively that has saved more runs for a team. Obviously, I haven't been here that long, and we've had greats. You know, you're talking from the B.J. Sarhoff to the Walt Weiss, position player-wise, to the Dustin Ackles, to the Kyle Seager. I mean, there's many, many, many. But I've never coached a guy with this much ability defensively in center field to change the game. But then offensively, you know, people will say, he's struggling a little bit at the plate. Well, is he really? I mean, he's second all-time now, and he's not going to play 4 years at the university. I don't think he is. I mean, I'd love to have him back for his fourth year, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I think what's going to happen with Vance Honeycutt is the old saying, some people don't understand what you have till it's gone. I already know this. And that's why I'm enjoying it every single day and just enjoying watching him play and watching him lead. I mean, he's an unbelievable student in the classroom. So, golly, man, I feel like I'm coaching the best player in the country.
One of the things you said post-game is that, enjoy him while he's there. One thing we were sort of talking about out in the stands is he's one of those guys that if you're a major league team and you pass on him, you can likely regret it down the road. And then on the converse side, if you take him and then he doesn't develop at the plate or whatever, then you still have a dynamic center fielder. I mean, so he's really a guy that he's got the great potential, right? Do you see a floor for him on the next level? And I know that's a
man, you guys see how young he is still in the face, and he's 21. I think he's 21 now. I have to check to make sure that he has turned.
He doesn't look it.
He might not have turned 21. I have to look. But people forget that. And you look at these major leaguers, there's a Holiday, yes, it's in the big leagues, but there's a lot of guys. You're really young in the major leagues if you're under 25. So think about that for a second. Like, these guys are grown men that, that age of that 5 to 7 year span where they're probably going to be their best, maybe 26 to 33, whatever it is, or maybe a little bit younger. So it would just be age getting them. That's the only thing I can see. I don't see him getting slower anytime soon. If anything, he's only going to continue to improve. Because if you look at the whole aspect of his game, I feel like it continues to get better. I mean, look at that throw he made. That was for Vance. I mean, that's a BB. So the arm, it's not like the arm is like, he just can't throw anybody out. Yeah, he's got a good arm too.
Yeah, I mean, he's a player, and your point, people see the plate appearances that go sideways, and they don't. I thought the opposite field home run was a tell that he's been working on that. I mean, I thought.
Well, people forget it's the hardest thing to do in sports. And Deion Sanders said it best. It's the hardest thing you've ever had to do, hit that baseball.
Yeah.
And it is. And you're going to fail no matter what. So even if you're a really good hitter and you happen to hit 400 in college, you're still failing a ton. You know, so Vance is right in that 300 range. He's driving in runs. He's stealing bases. He's got RBIs. He's got home runs. So that's what you're looking for. You know, a guy like Vance Honeycutt with that much power is going to change the game more a lot of times than the 350 hitter that's only hitting singles.
Coach Forbes, when you're coaching third base, how do you determine when it's time to start using small ball and start trading outs for bases versus letting players swing and, you know, try to husband those outs and try to, you know, hunt those RBIs? How do you make that decision?
Yes, you know, you always look at your team first, what type of team you have. I'm big on playing for the big inning as much as possible, innings 1 through 6. But there's also times where if a guy's really struggling somewhere in the order and somebody behind him is not, and somebody gets on base and you can bunt him up, that's where I look at it more like, okay, this guy's really struggling right now. I'm going to go ahead and sack bunt right here, move him to second base. And then if he gets to the top, we got Cook and Harbor ready to drive him in. So that's kind of how I look at it. I'm also looking at it, Matt, like based on the opponent we're playing. You know, you look at an offense like Virginia. If you're up 9-2 and it's the 6 and we have 1st and 2nd or the 5th, I might sack bunt because I know that they're going to make a run and their offense is that potent. But if it's 2-1, I know that Virginia's offense is that potent and one run probably ain't going to win that game. So we need to get both these runs and maybe we need a home run here or there. So there's a lot that goes into it, but really it's the biggest thing is, you know, where we are in the order and what the individual guy's doing and what his strengths and weaknesses are.
Got a question or two more. We're talking about head coach Scott Forbes here on This Week in UNC Baseball. What happens when a player runs through a stop sign?
If he's successful, nothing. It's a teaching time. If he's not successful, it's a chewing time. But, you know, we just talk through it. You know, I'm not perfect either. There are times where I might give a guy a stop sign where he should have went. And I always write my game card, trust your players, trust your coaches. And that's important as a head coach. But also there are times where you get lucky. And that luck can run out if you don't do things the right way fundamentally. So I look at it from the standpoint, okay, if I gave you that stop sign right there and you ran through it and they got caught off guard and you were safe, fine. But Madera hadn't been caught off guard on his relays, and that's why he's been throwing people out. So if they've got Madera out there and he turns and slings that ball, boom, he might be out. And look at D'Onofrio going on that pass ball at home. It was a gamble, but he went – right away, like we talk about, you can't hesitate, and he was safe, but he also didn't use his eyes enough and see that ball went directly back. In all reality, he probably should have come back to third base. So we'll coach those things.
Yeah, and the catcher, for some reason, thought he had the ball.
Correct.
It was bizarre. Notre Dame, that Sunday game looked like they were ready to get on back to South Bend a little bit, but one of the plays that sort of highlights D'Onofrio, and we've sort of been on his kick over the last couple of weeks because he's been great for you, is he walks – on 4 pitches, he goes to third on a wild pickoff, sort of a lazy play by the first baseman, I thought, and then he scores on that pass ball. So you've got a pitcher that they put in for Notre Dame that has 5 pitches, 2 errors virtually because the wild pitch and the pickoff throw. I mean, how key is that just to be able to – it's basically a stolen run for you. It didn't change the outcome Sunday.
Yeah.
But it's going to down the road.
Yeah, and speed, that's where speed matters. You know, when you have a guy like that that can run like that and he gets a second, maybe I'm kind of holding him, but we always teach our base runners, great base runners always know where the ball is. So he's getting a second, he gets his head around, he sees that guy's being lazy, and then he makes that decision to go to third base, which player decision, it was a good decision because he saw the same thing you saw from up top. I couldn't see it from over here that the first baseman was just kind of being lazy with it. As soon as D'Onofrio saw that, he had the burners to turn it on, where Johnny or Alberto don't have those burners. But, you know, you see the speed change when Madera rolls over a ball with the bases loaded. It's hard to turn a double play on that guy with speed. And then you got a guy, you know, behind him and Colby, maybe he's a little bit slower. That's why he's going to ground into more double plays and why he might sack bunt more as the season moves along than the guy that can have the speed. And the guys that have speed like that, it's just hard to turn double play, you know, with a guy like Honeycutt, D'Onofrio, or Madera.
Last question. I promised you I'd get you out of here before, but I want to ask Shea Sprague. I asked him about being more of a pitcher than a thrower. He's not going to throw 95, 96, but he's learned how to really pitch.
Yep.
Describe that for folks listening to this. I mean, not everybody – well, it seems like everybody now throws 100, but
yeah.
When you don't, how key is it to learn how to actually pitch?
Yeah, everybody's caught up in that velocity, but we train for that velocity. And if that velocity is right down the middle at the belt, we're going to hit it. The most frustrating pitchers are guys that can move their fastballs this direction. You got some guys that can pitch at the top, but you have to be really good to pitch at the top. Then you have to have something coming off that. Most of those are relievers nowadays. But, you know, being able to move your fastball to both sides, pitch in, have a go-to off-speed pitch that you can throw anytime, including 3-0. Because you guys see our team, like, we swing 3-0. And if you give us a fastball down the middle, we're going to try to do damage. But, you know, if you can throw that off-speed in any count and then add in another third pitch, you're neutralizing teams tremendously. And that's the definition of Shea Sprague. His velocity has climbed, but he can use that changeup anytime he wants. And then he can use his fastball glove side or his fastball arm side. So it's not like he can just throw everything away to righties. If you're right-handed hitter, you can say, hey, I'm just going to think away, and then he just dots you up inside because he's good at it. That's what it is, you know, being able to give and take with your speeds, but also pitch, you know, east and west, and not always north and south, what a lot of people are trying to do now. That's why there are more walks, because it's hard to get that call strike at the top.
That is head coach Scott Forbes, always gracious with his time, always a fun talk on Mondays. We could talk all day, but that'll do it for this day. Coach Forbes, appreciate you joining Matt and I.
Thank you, guys. Have a great week.
Yep.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.